Chapter 59. Reacher sat for a moment in the sudden silence with his ears ringing, and then he opened the Piper's door and climbed out to the wing. Thurman passed him the cardboard carton. Reacher took it one-handed and slid down to the tarmac. The two soldiers snapped to attention and threw salutes and stood there like a ceremonial detail, expectantly. Thurman climbed down behind Reacher and took the box from him. One of the soldiers stepped forward. Thurman bowed slightly and offered the box. The soldier bowed slightly and took it and turned on his heel and slow marched back to the Humvee. His partner fell in behind him, line astern. Thurman followed them. Reacher followed Thurman. The soldiers stowed the box in the Humvee's load bed and then climbed in the front. Reacher and Thurman got in the back. Big vehicle, small seats, well separated by the massive transmission tunnel, a diesel engine. They turned a tight circle on the apron and drove toward a building that stood alone in a patch of lawn. Lights were on in two ground floor windows. The Humvee parked, and the soldiers retrieved the box from the load bed and slow marched it into the building. A minute later, they came back out again without it. Thurman said,
"Job done. For tonight, at least."
"What was in the jar?"
"People," Thurman said. "Men? Maybe women. We scrape them off the metal. When there's been a fire, that's all that's left of them. Soot, baked onto steel. We scrape it off and collect it in twists of paper, and then we put the day's gleanings into jars. It's as close as we can get to giving them a proper burial."
"Where are we?"
"Fort Shaw, Oklahoma, up in the Panhandle. They deal with recovered remains here, among other things. They're associated with the identification laboratory in Hawaii."
"You come here every night?"
"As often as necessary, which is most nights, sadly."
"What happens now?"
"They give me dinner and they gas up my plane."
The soldiers climbed back into the front seats, and the Humvee turned again and drove 100 yards to the main cluster of buildings. A 50s army base, one of thousands in the world. Brick, green paint, whitewashed curbs, swept blacktop. Reacher had never been there before, had never even heard of it. The Humvee parked by a side door that had a sign that said it led to the officers' club. Thurman turned to Reacher and said,
"I won't ask you to join me for dinner. They'll have set just one place, and it would embarrass them."
Reacher nodded. He knew how to find food on post. Probably better food than Thurman would be eating in the O Club. "I'll be okay. And thanks for asking." Thurman climbed out and disappeared through the O Club door. The grunts in the front of the Humvee craned around, unsure about what to do next. They were both privates first class, probably stationed permanently in the States. Maybe they had a little Germany time under their belts, but nothing else of significance. No Korea time. No desert time, certainly. They didn't have the look. Reacher said, "Remember wearing diapers when you were 2 years old?" The driver said,
"Sir, not specifically, sir."
"Back then I was a major in the MPs, so I'm going to take a stroll now, and you don't need to worry about it. If you want to worry about it, I'll dig out your CO and we'll do the brother officer thing, and he'll okay it and you'll look stupid. How does that sound?" The guy wasn't totally derelict, not totally dumb. He asked,
"Sir, what unit and where?"
Reacher said, 110th MP. HQ was in Rock Creek, Virginia. The guy nodded.
"It still is. The 110th is still in business."
"I certainly hope so."
"Sir, you have a pleasant evening. Chow in the mess until 10 if you're interested."
"Thanks, soldier," Reacher said. He climbed out and the Humvee drove away and left him. He stood still for a moment in the sharp night air, and then set out walking to the standalone building. Its original purpose was unclear to him. No reason to have a physically separated building unless it held infectious patients or explosives, and it didn't look like either a hospital or an armory. Hospitals were bigger, and armories were stronger. He went in the front door and found himself in a small, square hallway with stairs ahead of him and doors either side. The upstairs windows had been dark. The lit windows had been on the ground floor. "If in doubt, turn left," was his motto. So he tried the left-hand door and came up empty. An administrative office. Lights blazing. Nobody in it. He stepped back to the hallway and tried the right-hand door. Found a medic with the rank of captain at a desk, with Thurman's jar in front of him. The guy was young for a captain, but medics got promoted fast. They were usually 2 steps ahead of everyone else.
"Help you?" the guy said.
"I flew in with Thurman. I was curious about his jar."
"Curious how?"
"Is it what he says it is?"
"Are you authorized to know?"
"I used to be. I was an MP. I did some forensic medicine with Nash Newman, who was probably your ultimate boss back when you were a second lieutenant, unless he had retired already. He's probably retired now." The guy nodded.
"He is retired now, but I heard of him."
"So are there human remains in the jar?"
"Probably. Almost certainly, in fact."
"Carbon?"
"No carbon," the guy said.
"In a hot fire, all the carbon is driven off as carbon dioxide. What's left of a person after cremation are oxides of potassium, sodium, iron, calcium, maybe a little magnesium, all inorganic."
"And that's what's in the jar?"
The guy nodded again. "Entirely consistent with burned human flesh and bone."
"What do you do with it?"
"We send it to the Central Identification Laboratory in Hawaii."
"And what do they do with it?"
"Nothing. There's no DNA in it. It's just soot, basically. The whole thing is an embarrassment, really. But Thurman keeps on showing up. He's a sentimental old guy. We can't turn him away, obviously. So we stage a sweet little ceremony and accept whatever he brings. Can't trash it afterward, either. Wouldn't be respectful. So we move it off our desks onto Hawaii's. I imagine they stick it in a closet and forget all about it."
"I'm sure they do."
"Does Thurman tell you where it comes from?"
"Iraq, obviously."
"But what kind of vehicles?"
"Does it matter?"
"I would say so."
"We don't get those details."
Reacher asked, "What was this building originally?"
"A VD clinic," the medic said.
"You got a phone I could use?" The guy pointed to a console on his desk.
"Have at it."
Reacher dialed 411 upside down and got the number for David Robert Vaughn, 5th Street, Hope, Colorado. He said the number once under his breath to memorize it and then dialed it. No answer. He put the phone back in the cradle and asked,
"Where's the mess?"
"Follow your nose," the medic said, which was good advice. Reacher walked back to the main cluster and circled until he smelled the aroma of fried food coming out of a powerful extraction vent. The vent came through the wall of a low, lean-to addition to a larger, square, one-story building. The mess kitchen and the mess. Reacher went in and got a few questioning looks, but no direct challenges. He got in line and picked up a cheeseburger the size of a softball, plus fries, plus beans, plus a mug of coffee. The burger was excellent, which was normal for the Army. Mess cooks were in savage competition to produce the best patty. The coffee was excellent, too. A unique, standardized blend, in Reacher's opinion, the best in the world. He had been drinking it all his life. The fries were fair, and the beans were adequate. All in all, probably better than the limp piece of grilled fish the officers were getting. He took more coffee and sat in an armchair and read the army papers. He figured the two PFCs would come get him when Thurman was ready to leave. They would drive their guests out to the flight line and salute smartly and finish their little show in style just after midnight. Taxiing, takeoff, the climb, then 90 minutes in the air. That would get them back to despair by 2, which seemed to be the normal schedule. 3 hours worth of free aviation fuel, plus a free 4-hour dinner. Not bad, in exchange for a quarter full jar of soot. A born-again Christian American and a businessman was how Thurman had described himself. Whatever kind of a Christian he was a useful businessman, that was for damn sure. The mess kitchen closed. Reacher finished the papers and dozed. The PFCs never showed. At 12:10 in the morning, Reacher woke up and heard the Piper's engine in the distance, and by the time the sound registered in his mind, it was revving hard. By the time he made it outside, the little white plane was on the runway. He stood and watched as it lifted off and disappeared into the darkness above.